everybody. Thank you for tuning in, whoever's on now and will join as we're doing this episode. So me and my co-host, Taekwon, we're going to talk about the Joker movie as it is, I believe it's coming out soon, if not today. But either way, it's been a popular movie throughout the country and I'm sure worldwide. What's up, bro? What's up, bro?
I don't know why. Every time I turn this joint on, my camera be facing the opposite way.
You probably got to hit it before, but if you got called up, like how you just joined, maybe don't give you that option. I don't know.
That joint weird, but what up, bro?
Yeah, what's good? I'm chilling, bro. But I was telling them how we basically going to talk about the Joker movie since it had a big impact on the world. And I believe that there's a deeper psychological message. Some people just, you know, enjoyed it for the, some people may have followed the comic series and they just followed it for that reason, or, you know, they, for whatever reason, just wanted entertainment. But I believe that in that movie, there was just a bigger, deeper psychological message. And we're going to kind of break that down and get into it.
Yeah, I agree. I think the movie had a lot of impact both ways, like because of the comic book lifestyle. It was like the comic book fans said that it was like a whole different version of the Joker or whatever. But it made such an impact as far as like the comic book movies, because now we got like this rated R, but also like so close to reality type of movie. Mm-hmm. And I think because it's so close to reality, it scares people in a sense, you know what I mean? Because they, like, this way that his life played out, it could affect anybody, bro. Like, it's just crazy. Yeah.
And I like the message of, like, the fact that he was, like, the person who was forgotten about in society. Like, he was the person that was different. And because you're different, you're a freak or you're weird or we're going to just write you off and you're not important. You know what I'm saying? So, one thing, let's get right into it. Like, when the movie started, one of the things that I noticed right away was that he was putting on a mask. And for those who are just joining, we're talking about the Joker movie. He was putting on a mask, right? So it starts off by showing he's trying to hide himself. He's trying to hide himself from the world because for whatever reason, either he's not secure with the person behind the mask, or society doesn't approve of that, so he wants to have a disguise or something to protect him, right? So he's putting on the mask and whatever, and then he's like, he puts on the mask and it's like he's has like an angry face on, or like a sad face on, and he goes like this with his lips trying to force a smile, and it won't smile. So he keeps forcing it until he pulls it and it hurts and he starts crying, because it's like he probably wants to be happy so bad, but he can't, and he's hiding behind this mask.
All right, so how do you want to break it down? You want to, like, because you started at the beginning, like, is it okay if I jump ahead and, like, reveal the spoilers, or you want to, like, take it scene by scene kind of thing?
Well, what do you feel about, we're gonna progressively go through it, but, like, what do you feel about that point right there, or what did the opening or beginning of the movie, what are some takeaways you took away right away?
He's in pain. Obviously, you know, when he's forcing that laughter, before we even find out that the laughter is a neurological condition, you can see that he's forcing that laugh out. He's trying to force himself to be happy. In the beginning scene, he's tossing that wooden flyer banner thing or whatever, that sign. And it's saying, like, you know, he's got to do this for a living. Like, nobody wants to do that, you know what I mean? So, like, he's just kind of, like, stuck in a dead-end job, it seems like. But he's trying to make the best of it with the smile and the mask, right?
Right.
And then he gets jumped. People just, like, make fun of him, and they jump him. It's like society finds a way in this movie to constantly shit on him.
That makes sense, man. And what you're saying, that was a great point, because it reminded me, like, another thing that I realized in that movie was the fact that he started out as innocent. We all start out innocent. We have a blank slate. We have not experienced the world yet. We have not gone through any of the pain or the pleasure yet. And as the movie progressed, we learned that his mother was delusional. His mother had issues, right? So this gets passed down in any family. This is going to get passed down. If you're not stable within yourself, then you're going to affect the people around you, especially a kid, right? Because you are the kid's example of what's real, what's right, and what's wrong. So the mother's boyfriend would tie the Joker to a radiator and make him burn, right?
Yep.
And if we look at the movie, every time the Joker felt pain, he started laughing. That was one of my takeaways. Every time he felt pain, he started laughing. Every time something was uncomfortable, he started laughing. And his name is the Joker. So it made me think that as he was going through life, he got so numb to pain or accepted it as such a reality that he was like, it's normal. And I'm just going to laugh. And that's going to be my coping mechanism. Mm-hmm. And and when you said that he broke the sign, you said they broke the, you were talking about the sign, right? When they broke the sign. What was he doing there? He was being just a person doing his job. He wasn't bothering anybody. He was holding up a sign. And what happens? Three people try to mess with him. And then they chase him down. Or he chases them down to get the sign back. Because he's going to get in trouble if he loses it. It's not even his. And then he gets beat down and jumped, right? Well, so it's like life continues to show him that no matter what I do, no matter how kind I am, no matter how much of an open, honest heart I have, I'm going to get the short end of the stick.
Yeah, I agree. This movie has a lot of examples of nature versus nurture. You can see, like, he is a product of his environment. His environment being the outside world, like how they influence him, then the inside, like with his parents. First off, I guess spoiler alert, he's adopted. You know, his mother in that movie isn't really his mother, which he finds out later along in the movie. But she's delusional as well. So as she's nurturing him and raising him, she's creating this little delusion inside his own head. You know, he's trying to she's imprinting on him in a sense. She's trying to tell him that he's a happy kid and there's nothing wrong with him and he's going to be fine. He's trying to say, like, yo, there's something wrong. She's like, no, don't worry about that. Put this mask on. Everything is good. You're fine.
Right.
So, and then with the whole abusive step pops, I was reading something a little bit ago, and it was saying, like, he learns the abuse from his step pops or whatever, adopted pops, whatever. He learns that abuse from him. So when he spazzes out in the movie, that's after he, like, starts to figure things out for himself. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to take this role. And it was saying, like, he was impressioned by that pops as well, that father figure.
Okay. And another thing I realized was that it almost seemed that the job that he had, right, being able to put on a mask that was smiling, though he may not have felt happy at the time, the fact that he was able to put on that mask and his job was to go make other people happy, he seemed to be most happy when doing his job. Because even before he got fired, in the movie, he was dancing, I think, in the hospital and playing around with the kids. And they were singing, if you're happy and you know it, raise your hand or something like that. And he was smiling, laughing. And when the boss found out that he had the gun at the job, he told him that he was going to get fired. And he was like, but I really love this job. Please, no, I really love this job. Because it seems like that was his only happy moment. That was his only escape, to put on this mask, to go into the world and serve others and see other kids that are happy or trying to be happy and brighten their day. You know what I'm saying? So I think that can apply to a lot of us too. Some of us, our jobs are an escape, or some of us, we're going to put on a mask and you feel better when you're in that world, whether it's a fake version of yourself or whatever. But then when you face your reality, you really have demons, right? But even though he had demons, he was trying to step outside of himself and not focus on that for the moment and focus on the kids that he was impacting or whoever he was impacting for the moment. So that was a key takeaway for me as well, that like his job became an escape, or even though he was hurting, being able to impact others kind of made him feel better for a little bit. And then that was taken away from him.
Yeah, I think you brought up a great point, because I was actually thinking about how when Robin Williams died, there was like, yo, it's crazy. You would never expected that from him. You wouldn't have expected the suicide. And they were saying, like, sometimes I guess it's like the happiest people are the ones that are dying inside. And those happy people, you know, on the outside, they're trying to look happy. They're like, they're fighting inner demons, but they're trying to make the people around them happy, you know? Right. So that's kind of like what the Joker was doing as well. He's trying to make everybody else happy about what's going on. Even though his life is shit, he's still trying to like be a productive member of society. He's still trying to move forward and make other people happy, because he know that he cannot have that happiness himself. Absolutely. But he's not going to try to deprive anybody else from this happiness.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
And also, he said, like, when you said he was getting fired and he was like trying to plead for that job, that's another example of society shitting on him, because his coworker gave him a gun and Joker was like, yo, you know I'm not supposed to have this gun, right? And he was like, no, it's all right, it's all right. But I was watching the movie last night too, and I peeped at a certain point that he was like, when he was getting fired, he was like, yeah, you know, it was just a prop. Like, I didn't mean to have the gun, like, whatever, you know. And the boss was like, yo, the co-worker said that you tried to buy that off him last week. Like, So the co-worker snitched him. Like, yo, it's crazy because, like, when I was watching, I picked up so many different things now that I watched it over and over again. But it's like, so your co-worker snitched on you. He gave you the gun a week prior, said you tried to buy it from him, then you get fired for having it. It's like society keeps fucking him over and over again.
Exactly.
But the reason why his co-worker gave him the gun was because he got jumped with that sign. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And it just shows the repetitive cycle of mistrust. He's like... Mm-hmm. Put in a position where he's going to just continue not to trust people. And another, you know, moving forward in everything that we've said so far, mm-hmm. it's interesting because his reality also determined what his imagination was like. Because there was a point where he started imagining things. One, his favorite idol, Maury, which was like a comedy figure. It was Robert De Niro in the movie. It was like a comedy figure who he looked up to. Now, comedy, one, seemed to be an escape from reality. The laughing to mask the pain. That's one thing. Then, mm-hmm. when he was fantasizing about meeting Maury for the first time, Maury was complimenting him about on taking care of his mother. He was complimenting him about that being an admirable thing, as well as him being funny. And he also was mm-hmm. like, I would give up everything that I have to have a son like you, right? Yeah. So. This actually likens to what Sigmund Freud, the father of modern day psychology, would call wish fulfillment in your dreams. In your mm-hmm. dreams, we're having wish fulfillment a lot of the times. Now, I'm not saying that's a universal or like a end all be all with the dream analysis thing, but that was one of the things he said, because we also have nightmares, so that can't be a wish fulfillment right there. But that could have been wish fulfillment for the Joker, right? Like, he wants that so bad, even when he was with the girl. Like, remember that scene? That scene where it seemed like it was a reality that he was going after this girl that he really liked that lived down the hall from mm-hmm. him, to the point where his fantasy made the viewer believe it was a reality. And it was like the things that she would say. She would compliment him on his jokes, though the world thought he wasn't funny. Yeah, like his mom and a bunch of other people. He actually had that funny moment when he was like, everyone, I told everyone I'd be a comedian, and he was standing up on stage, and he said, and no one's laughing now. Like,
that was... I was going to open up the session with that, but he was mad serious, so...
listen, this, I'm the serious one. We talk about the Joker, you feel me? All right, but in his imagination, he wanted someone to understand him, right? He wanted a counterpart that could be with him in life, and She even complimented him on murdering the people he murdered. Like, well, you must have been a real badass, and whoever got it deserved it, and all this stuff. So, what do you take on that about his imagination? What do you think about his imagination? What's your take on it?
So, I feel like we yearn for things that we want to have so badly, but even though we can't reach it, it doesn't stop us from dreaming. I believe that he was a dreamer, and he grew up in a broken household. The abuse, the neglect, the malnourishment, you know.
Forgot about that.
So, yeah, he wanted to be different from what he's seen. Like, a lot of times, like, even though you're a product of your environment, you don't have to follow in those same footsteps, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think he aspired to be different. Or it could just be the mask that, you know, he probably told himself when he was a kid, everything is fine as well, you know? So it's a couple different takeaways from that, but I truly think that he wanted to do things differently. Like, he knew what was going on was wrong, but he put it behind him. It was like in the back of his mind. Mm-hmm. He was just more so like, all right, this is how I want to live my life. This is going to be fine, you know? And I think he kind of saw that opportunity with that girl, because she had a kid. Mm-hmm. That was like his little family at that point. Mm-hmm. Even though he didn't really interact with the daughter too much, but you could see that he was yearning for that family.
For sure, for sure. There was two things also that made me, two things that were like underlying the influence that power has in our life, like those in power, mm-hmm. how they look at someone who is struggling with mental illness. So there was one scene where like he was talking to his boss, going back to when he got fired, when he got the sign stolen, when like the sign was stolen and broken, and he was like, listen, man, I need you to return the sign. He was like, someone stole it and broke it. He's like, why would someone want to steal a sign? And then he was like, I don't know, they stole it or whatever. And then he was like, well, I need you to return it to me. He's like, I don't have it. Why would I want to keep it at my house? That's what the Joker said. Why do I want to keep it at my house? And then the boss said, I don't know. Why does anyone do anything? It's like you just contradicted yourself. Exactly. So why couldn't you believe that the whole time? Why couldn't you believe that? And he was like, pretty much, he's like, listen, if you don't return it, it's coming out your paycheck. And he said, listen, man, I'm trying to help you. And it's like, no, you're not trying to help me. You're trying to help yourself. You make it seem like you're trying to help me, but all you really care about is your power. And how many bosses do we have or have we dealt with that feel the same way, that act the same way? You get what I'm saying? And the next thing was, well, do you have something to say about that before I say what I had to say?
I might interfere with your next idea as well, but we'll see. So I think that's like that misguided trust. Like, you know, you're manipulative. You try to say, I'm on your side. I'm really here for you. I care about you. And you just really want that the end result to be in your favor.
Right.
You know, I think a lot of bosses do that. But also, I was going to lead into his psychiatrist. Were you going there?
The notes. So what are the notes that he had written down?
So I'm just jumping to that right now. The psychiatrist, at a certain point, she was trying to cut him off. She was like, oh, the system, they're not working in our favor anymore. We got to cut you off. Meanwhile, he's sitting here expressing like, yo, it's crazy. You know, I never really felt like I existed, you know. Even at work, I never knew I existed until recently. Well, you know, that's when I had a job. So this is after he got fired. He's trying to express himself. He's trying to talk to her. And she's like, yo, you cannot get this medicine anymore. You cannot do this. You cannot do that. He's like, yo.
He's like, time's up, my guy.
Yeah. He's like, yo, are you listening to anything I'm saying? Like, I come in here every single week and I tell you that, yo, I'm having negative thoughts. And you say, oh, well, is there anything I could do for you? And you don't do anything. Like, you know, another example of society shitting on him. Like, nobody's taking care of him. And that's why he takes shit in his own hands.
Exactly. Exactly. He was trying to pour his heart out to her. And she just telling him, like, listen, I don't have, like, basically, once the check was cut, there was nothing else to talk about. I don't care about this person. And he sensed that from before because he said early on, you don't listen to me. I feel like you never listen to me. So there was another thing with that psychiatrist. Well, his meeting with the psychiatrist. One thing that he said was, it's getting crazy out there, right? And he was like starting to break down certain things that are happening in society. And it shows that the people that we think are crazy, that we call crazy, they're very conscious and they're aware. They're just on a different side of the coin, so to speak, than maybe the common person. And I believe that we all have darknesses and we all have been through stuff. It's about how you deal with it. Some people want to hide from that and act like they're holier than thou, have never been through stuff. But if you have been through something, or it's inevitable that you're going to go through something, when you get out on the other end, you should never forget about the person on that's still on that side. And your job is to help them and work with them through that. But anyway, he was like, he's getting crazier out there. He started showing his conscious side to show, like, because y'all think I'm crazy and I'm a freak or I'm whatever, I'm still conscious. I'm still aware. Like, don't get it twisted. But she wasn't even acknowledging him because she already written him off. And plus, the check stopped coming. Another thing he said, I wrote the quote down. I can't find it right now.
I got some quotes up here as well. Which one are you talking about?
All right, but it's something to the effect of, he said, basically dealing with mental illness. He said, with mental illness, people tell you to behave as if you aren't already, or they expect you to behave as if you're not already, saying that this is my behavior. I am behaving. Oh, what am I not behaving the way you want me to behave? I am behaving, but you act like I don't even have behavior. Like, what I'm doing is so outlandish that it's not even, it's like animalistic. It's not even something to be credited. And you could take that two different ways. You can say like, hey, that's just who he is. Or like, you know, this is behaving and we need to open up our understanding, or maybe listen to his behaviors or look at his behaviors, I mean, and see how we can help this person, right? I think it's actually a combination of both. Like, look at how he's behaving. Some of it is just an individual. He's being him. He's being an individual and that's it. The parts that may show like, yo, he needs some help, or he can use some assistance on his path, that's what you have to first listen and observe it and be aware of what this person is doing, and then say, okay, well, how can I best serve this person? How can I best help this person from that point?
Yeah. So in the beginning of that quote, he says, is it just me or is it getting crazy out there?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times in, you know, our reality, we may say that in like a layman's fashion, you know, like, is it me or is it just cold outside? Like, you know, like, we say it so playful, but I think in that sense, he was literally asking because he was trying to decipher between reality and his delusions.
Right.
Is it me or is it really getting crazy out there? And, you know, the social worker, she kind of says, yeah, it's a little tense out there. You know, these are tough times. oh, but how's your journal though? Like, she's trying to avoid the conversation, get straight to it.
Absolutely.
And then in the journal, we see what I like to refer to as dark humor. You know, when he was like, I just hope that my death makes more sense in my life.
Mm-hmm.
He thought it was funny. She's looking at him like, yo, you're nuts. What's going on?
Yeah, exactly.
But she's still in like, so her response is pretty much like, oh, so how does it feel coming up to here talking to somebody? And he's like, yo, I had more help when I was in the hospital.
Right.
So like, again, he's saying like, yo, you're not doing anything for me. Mm-hmm. I'd much rather be locked up in a hospital or something. Up my medications, do something. He's crying out for help through his humor, through his conversation, and she's still ignoring him.
100%, bro. And this is another thing. So, what was I going with this? Okay, so obviously throughout the movie, you realize that the Joker has numbed himself to trauma to the point that the only reaction he has is laughing. Even when he's not supposed to laugh, he just laughs. Because I take it as, at least personally, he has numbed himself to that point that I'm just going to laugh. That's the only way to react to this, because I've become so numb to this and I've accepted it as a reality. Right?
Right.
So the thing is that life has handed him a hard hand to deal with, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the way that he's adjusted is he's become numb and he sees it as all a joke, even when stuff is serious, I guess, to the other person. Like, even when he went on the Maury show and he shot the dude, he just acted like he was regular. Like, it was like, what are we all worried about? And then even before shooting him, he was like, they were talking about the three guys who had got killed. I think it was Joker who did it. But he was talking about the three guys who got killed, and like, it was just like such a tragedy or whatever. And he's just like, huh. And I think he even laughed about it, like made a gesture about it and everything, because he's like, you guys were like, oh my God, but I've been freaking getting abused my whole life and you guys write me off. So the fact that he's become numb to this hand that he was dealt, he's now called crazy, right? That's crazy in itself. He's looked at as the bad guy now, because life has given him a bullshit hand. And when he's been crying for help, when he's been the innocent child, they keep stepping on him and twisting their foot. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, now that he's just like, whatever, this is life. I'm so numb to it. I'm just going to laugh now. Like, this dude is weird. And, well, do you want something? You have something to say before I get into the next one? Because you know I can keep going.
Yeah, I know. So as far as him being desensitized to all this trauma and everything around him, the abuse and everything like that, I think this is what the movie producers were scared about when they originally released the movie. I know there was like some type of controversy saying like, yo, we don't want to release this because people are going to be influenced in the wrong manner by this. I think a lot of people can relate to this shit hand that Joker's been dealt. Maybe not to the same extent, or it could just even be worse, you know what I mean? And I know we talk about it a lot of times, and I always say this to anybody I try to talk to. It's like, if you can't change the situation, change how you react to it. I say that in like a positive tone, but it seems like Joker, he went with the negative tone, like, yo, I can't change the situation, but, you know, I've been trying to act nice about it, but now I'm about to just change the whole dynamic. I'm about to change the whole narrative. I'm about to switch up. And it's crazy, because I think also the producers were scared about the Batman shooting years ago. I think it was 2009, 2008, whatever. They were scared that people were going to do the same thing in the theaters because of how maniacal Joker is.
Mm-hmm.
But it just goes to show, like, anybody can have this bad day. Even when you're reaching out and crying out for help, this can go on and on and on. I think he was searching for help even up to his last moment. When he found out he was adopted, he went into that little psych hospital or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, yo, how does one end up in here? And it was just like, well, you got to do some crazy stuff or be crazy or want to hurt yourself. Mm-hmm. He was like, oh, okay, because I've done some things. He was like finding his... So, like, even up until that point, even after he committed the murders, he's just like, you know what? I know I need help. Like, he's still searching for help. And that kind of plays a role, like, yo, a parallel to society right now is like, yo, even if you need help, don't ever stop looking for it, because he never stopped as well. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Even though you've done wrong, you can always, like, still try to get that forgiveness, get that repentance. You know what I mean? Like, you can always do something. Just don't stop.
Yeah, a little.
If you really need help, search for that help. Find somebody who will help you. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
For sure. Now you're good. And then, like, it was weird. One thing I noticed the second time I watched it was he started by banging his head on the hospital door. That's how the movie started. Then it ended with him in the hospital. So then I was thinking, like, maybe this whole movie was something in his imagination. And even if it was, it goes to show that, like, people that we, again, write off as crazy and all these other words and labels, they really have a beautiful thing in their mind. If that whole movie could be in someone's imagination, because I'm sure the writers and producers were inspired by some real stories and case studies out there, like, that's crazy. That's art. That's, like, genius. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, because someone's mind doesn't operate just like yours, you still need to sit back and
take them off.
Yeah, don't write them off. Sit back and take some appreciation. Maybe try to learn something and change your paradigm. But a lot of the times, we don't want to change our paradigm because that keeps us safe. And if ours was a little flawed, what does that say about us? Have we been living life wrong the whole time? That's why people don't want to switch up that paradigm or change the narrative that they believe in.
Yeah, I think when I looked at the movie ending, he was talking to that psych doctor, like the next person in that hospital, and then we see him at the beginning of the movie banging his head. I think what happened, in my opinion, I was like, maybe he has been in this hospital and now he's just replaying this story. But certain parts of the story that he's replaying, maybe he's talking to the psych doctor and he's just replaying the story, you know, and certain things he's like, can't separate reality from fantasy.
That makes sense.
So I feel like, yeah, he was in the hospital the whole time, but maybe he was talking to this doctor the whole time, explaining the story. Or maybe he, like, it's so many times that you can look at the movie and like, yo, maybe he did this, maybe he did that. So many different things you can get, because you really can't separate reality from fantasy unless it's, like, hard cues. Like, when his life is going good, obviously it's a fantasy, you know what I mean? But that's killing, like, I can't.
Yo, killing. They weren't even at the movie.
Well, exactly, right?
Was I watching?
When he did the killing on the subway, I was like, yo, is that real? Is it not real? I couldn't really tell. But you can always get something different from the movie. What I want to bring up real quick, though, like you said, we should not give up on other people. We try to put ourselves in their position. There's this show on Netflix called Atypical, which is completely different from what we're talking about, but it has to deal with a kid dealing with autism. He's like functional on the spectrum, but he has autism. Watching that series allowed me to kind of put myself in those shoes, like seeing how he has to deal with his family, relationships, and everything like that. You know, it made me more keen and more sensitive to that disability or whatever you want to call that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think we should, you know, put ourselves in other people's shoes. Let's stop writing people off.
For sure. And with that being said, at the end of the movie, I took a unique takeaway, because I know you didn't take the same thing at first, at least. But I took a certain takeaway from the way the movie ended, or one of the last scenes before the movie ended, which was when the Joker got kidnapped, right? Or was he in the cop car when they were, like, driving?
He was pretty much arrested after the Maury show.
Okay, he was arrested. Yeah, he was arrested after the Maury show. And then he was in the cop car. As they're driving to wherever they were going, I guess to the jail, the cop car gets hit by a big-ass truck. And, like, it just, like, flies out, whatever. Joker's in the backseat, all knocked out, unconscious. Blood all over his face or whatever. And then the people who were rioting in the streets, they were rioting for the Joker. They were rioting because because those three people had got killed, but they understood, like,
just pain and suffering.
Exactly. And also that what the reason was for killing them, like, they were on the side of the killer. Like, yeah, these guys deserve to die. Listen, guys, I know this may be hard for some people to hear. They don't mean to, like, make it sound crazy, but I'm just relaying the facts to you from the movie. Some people felt like those three guys should have died, and they were on that side. So when Joker is in the backseat of the cop car, all bloody or whatever, they start to knock at the window so they break it open, and they pull him out the cop car through the window. And then they lay him on top of another cop car that had gotten messed up in the accident. And he's laying there for a while, and then he starts to wake up, and then he starts to look around, and he sees, like, people, like, around, like, almost, like, parading, like, and then he's, like, looking around, and then, like, he, like, is in, like, a puzzled look, but also, like, kind of starting to realize what's going on. And then he gets up and stands up and turns around and looks around. And then he took the blood and, like, made it into a smile, which was, to me, the key takeaway that the whole story behind Joker, or at least that movie, was him taking his pain and becoming numb to it, taking his pain and smiling about it. Like almost I'm unbreakable now. Nothing can shake me because I've been so broken that it's like I was taught or I've learned to take my pain and just turn it around. And like, I'm the leader of people who've had to do that, who've had to go through pain and
he's like a pariah.
And now make something of that.
Yeah, he's like kind of like a pariah, like the outcast. Like,
yeah.
you know, look at me, I'm the example, I'm that role model now. I had to go through this, so you got, I was like a martyr, but you know, he didn't die, so.
But he's like wearing it now, he's like owning it now, at that point.
Yeah. So I took a different thing, like, you really analyzed that part. I was just looking at it, I'm like, yo, this ain't real. Because again, like I said, everything that's happy in his life, it's fake, in my opinion, for that movie. So, him being like, honored in that such fashion, I'm like, nah. Don't nobody love him that much, because, you know, the movie shows everybody's been shitting on him, so I can't, like, believe that. But one of the things I did take away from this was, like I said, I tried to make that parallel to reality, and I said that, you know, no one ever really looks at the person before they commit the crime and say, oh, let's help them before they commit a crime, let's help prevent this action. We always look at the crime in the aftermath, like, damn, I can't believe he did this. You know, if he would have just asked for help, I would have been there to help him. But, like, we don't see these little signs. You know, I kind of think about, like, school shooters and, like, the suicides that, you know, come from, you know, random events like bullying or et cetera, et cetera. Everybody always says, damn, I wish they would have told us. Like, I wish I knew what they were going through. I could have helped them out. But it's like, yo, what about when he was hitting you up at 12 o'clock and you was just like, nah, I don't want to talk right now.
Yeah, I don't want to talk.
Like, yeah, what about, like, the Facebook posts that seem kind of sketchy, and you're like, nah, that's just weird, but you don't respond. Like, people have signs before they do things. Mm-hmm. You just have to pay more attention to that shit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Man, I got a lot of my points out. I don't know if you have more things you want to get across.
I was going to say, so his mom was delusional the whole time, right? This is another example of society fucking him over. If you're adopted and this is abuse going on, it wasn't rich or anything like that, so obviously they were neighbors in the, you know, they were neighbors in the apartment building. Joker had to go to school. There's people in the corner store, you know, wherever he's going. How is it possible that through all these years, nobody ever called social services on them? That's child services, anything like that.
That's true.
Nobody ever reported the abuse of this kid. You know, you got the teachers as well, you got family. He had to have some type of family, you know what I mean? Like Thanksgiving, holidays, stuff like that. Like, nobody ever reported this.
I know.
It's another example of society failing him.
That's very true. That's very true. Yeah, like, that's kind of like what I said earlier, too. Like, when we're looking at someone, you know, the popular saying, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. So a lot of the way that we're shaped as individuals stems from the guidance of our parents or lack thereof. Or, like, the results of some of their crucial decisions in life. So, yeah, I mean, that happens too. And again, a lot of times the system will fail people. We got people in jail right now who maybe need help opposed to being behind bars. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I mean, that's a fact, man.
I was also saying that she constantly, you know, she's telling that he was a happy kid, but, like, remember he was doing the Maury delusion, and he was like, I live with my mom, and everybody laughed at him or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he was like, you know, she always tells me to smile and put on a happy face. She says I was here to spread joy and laughter. Mm-hmm. There's that scene, and then, you know.
It was laughing, all right.
Yeah, it was laughing. But it was like that scene happened, and he's like, damn. He's got this embedded in his brain from when he was a little kid that his mommy always tell him this stuff. And then...
But then she didn't even believe in him. She was, like, telling me he's not funny.
Yeah, but I peeped that earlier. He was saying, "Yo, mom, shut down, shut up, shut up. Thomas Wayne is on the TV. I want to hear what he's got to say." And when Thomas Wayne was like, yo, this is a coward's act, you know? I can't believe this would happen. Like, you know, what a joker, you know?
Yeah.
He started laughing, and his mom was like, yo, that's not funny. Like, So you can see he still has that dark side of humor. Like, he's laughing at the disbelief that Thomas Wayne would even say this, but he's also laughing at the fact, like, yo, I wasn't a coward. I actually stood up, and I protected that lady. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, like, you got the whole game twisted, but his comedy is off.
That too, and then also talking about coward, all this other stuff. Let's talk about how, again, we learned later on that he was an adopted kid, but he always wanted somebody to want him. He didn't have a father figure there. He wanted that father figure because when Thomas Wayne, when he did have that moment where he met Thomas Wayne in the bathroom, he was like, "Do you know who I am?" He told him that he was his dad. He's like, "Yo, you're my dad. I want to know why you left me, whatever." And the dude was just, like, so distraught. Like, bro, I'm not your father. Like, punched Joker dead in the face. I wanted to punch him around. And walked over him and just left. Like, so it was just like, man, like, I, no matter what I do, I'm trying to, like, this is supposed to be, like, my dad for crying out loud. Like, I'm just trying to tell him how happy I am to see him, that I want him to, like, love me. I want to get to know you, all this stuff. And this is what I get. And, you know, come to find out that wasn't his dad. But he probably still feels that way, that he's been punched in the face by whoever his dad was in life. And it's like, that takes a toll on him, too. And it's just, like, that recurring theme of, like, this person has a heart. This person started off innocent and has been dragged through the mud by society. And I feel like a key takeaway for those who are listening is, like, you may know that person who may be a little different. You may know that person who is going through stuff, or that person that people are writing off and saying he's weird, he's crazy. Your intuition tells you what you should do. Sometimes someone's just so dangerous and so lost that you have to step away for your own safety. But if it could, if you can, whether you're in high school, you're in college, wherever, you see these people that are a little different, reach out a helping hand. Like, have a conversation with them. Just, you don't know how much just having some form of acquaintance with them for a split second may make their day, right? Yeah. Don't listen to what people have said about them and write them off because they're weird, or they're freaks, or they're, like, crazy, or they're, like, delusional. They don't even have meaning, pretty much, is what people try to write you off to. Like, you have no meaning. You have, your life is no value. Don't listen to that. And if you know that person, go ahead and do something nice for them. Say something nice to them. Compliment them. Have, like I said, a two-minute conversation with them and really care. Don't just do it because, oh, I'm just trying to get this out the way. Really care for those 2 minutes, and you'd be surprised how far that goes.
Yeah, that's one way to get back to society, ultimately. Just, you know, I guess, like, being a humanitarian as well, just, like, raising up the conversation there. Let's talk about people that are searching for help, and let's talk to them. You know, a lot of times when people, like I said, when people are searching for help, they give you these signs, give you these clues. We need to start paying more attention to that. I remember years ago when I was in high school still, I read something that said, like, a smile or a wave to somebody can save their life. And I was like, what? But as a deeper meaning, it was like, is somebody walking through this world who was thinking about suicide today? They are thinking that they are lonely in this world, that nobody cares about them. And by simply waving, smiling, having a conversation, it can change their whole outlook on life.
100%, you know? Man. 100%.
And I think what typically happens is, like, we get so caught up in our own world that we fail to see that there's people around us. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We get self-centered at times, because I'm guilty of it as well. Like, when I go to the gym, headphones on, I ignore everybody.
Right.
You know what I mean? And there's a lot of times, if I got headphones on, I'm ignoring the whole world. Sometimes at work, I put my headphones on and I ignore everybody, you know. But there's other times where I'm, like, that sensitive person. I'm like, yo, I noticed that your behaviors have changed. Is everything okay at home? And I truly mean that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just because I want to be that open communication if somebody is crying for help.
Absolutely, man. But, and I mean, you do need self-care at the same time, because you can't take care of somebody else until you have taken care of yourself. And so when you have that hour of meditation in the gym of, like, I'm not going to worry about any other problems, that's not necessarily an unhealthy thing. But I do understand, like, if you see someone in the gym struggling, if you see, you know, whatever, if you see somewhere that you can help in the gym where, like, someone needs a hand with something, lifting a weight off of themselves, whatever, like, that's cool to just lend a hand there or something. But I also want to tell people real quick, whoever's watching now and who will continue to watch, you know, as it's up there for 24 hours on the story. This is the Competent Conversations podcast. Taquan and I developed this podcast a couple of months ago, and we just have exactly that, worthy conversations. It started from just talking on the phone and talking on a regular basis and saying, like, if we share these conversations with other people, maybe they would get something from it. So Competent Conversations, it can be found on YouTube. The channel is Freedom Fit Coaching. You can get, it can be found on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and any podcast platform that you listen to. Competent Conversations.
Yes, sir. I think episode 8 is officially up right now as well. So we have 8 episodes, and they all have different things. They all have different takeaways. So please check those episodes out. Really appreciate the support. You can find me on All I Do Is Fit, as you see on your screen. And I'm on All I Do Is Fit on Snapchat as well. Taquan Lima on Facebook.
I'm freedom.fit.coaching on Instagram. My other Instagram page is Rashard.Neil. You can find me on YouTube at Freedom Fit Coaching. You can find me on Snapchat at Rashard.Neil. Website is Rashard.Neil.com. And if you check any one of my Instagram pages, you're going to see the link for my new clothing line. check it out. If it's something you like, go ahead and get something for the holidays and spread the word. So we appreciate you guys for watching and listening.
Peace.
All right, guys, signing out.